what's up, y'all? Kelly Clarkson with Wayfair. My favorite thing about the holidays? Decking out my whole house. It's not a competition, but if it was, well, I'd win the season with Wayfair. Outdoor inflatable Santa? Got it on Wayfair. Trees, lights, and ornaments? Wayfair. Hosting must-haves like dining sets, beds, sheets, and towels? Wayfair. For everything in your style delivered with fast and free shipping, visit Wayfair.com or the Wayfair app to win the season. But again, it's not a competition.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
Welcome back to The Deep Dive. This is where we take the source material, the history, the economics, the culture, and distill it down into the core insights you need to be genuinely well-informed.
And today, we are strapping in for a deep dive into a city that really defines American history, Philadelphia.
Known across the globe by its breezy nickname, Philly, but also by its far more symbolic title, the City of Brotherly Love.
And that name, Philadelphia, is so key to its founding spirit. It comes directly from the ancient Greek terms, philos, meaning beloved or dear, and adelphos, which means brother or brotherly.
So it's a mission statement right there in the name.
It really is. It sets an incredibly high bar, one that the city has been striving, you know, sometimes successfully, sometimes tumultuously, to live up to for over three centuries.
It's a powerful foundation, but our mission today is to move past those beautiful yet kind of static images of Independence Hall and the Liberty Bell,
which are often the first and sometimes only things people associate with the city.
Exactly. We need to understand Philadelphia in its current, deeply complex and economically vibrant form.
And that complexity is certainly reflected in the numbers. While it remains this historical anchor, Philadelphia is very much a modern regional powerhouse.
Okay.
The 2020 census confirms it as the sixth most populous city in the United States, clocking in with over 1.6 million residents.
Sixth most populous.
And that city anchors the ninth largest metropolitan area in the country, the Delaware Valley, which encompasses a massive 6.33 million people.
That's a staggering regional footprint, especially considering the narrative of decline the city faced in the 20th century. What does that kind of scale translate to economically?
Well, it translates to immense financial clout. The region's economic output, what we call the gross metropolitan product, was estimated at an immense $479 billion as recently as 2021.
Wow.
So you're looking at a place that isn't just surviving on historical tourism. It is a major nexus of finance, technology, logistics, and increasingly life sciences and education.
Okay, let's unpack this. Our journey today will trace that entire path from William Penn's utopian spiritual vision as the colonial capital,
through its dramatic 20th century population swings and institutional crises,
and right up to its modern status as a public art capital and a massive academic and transportation hub. We promise you, you'll walk away realizing this city has a lot more going on than just founding documents and world-famous sandwiches.
A lot more.
So before William Penn arrived with his charter and his grid plan, we have to start with the people who were already here.
Exactly. To understand Philadelphia, you have to acknowledge the pre-colonial landscape. Prior to the 17th century European arrival, the entire Delaware River watershed was the ancestral home of the Lenape, often called the Delaware Indians.
Right.
They were a sophisticated civilization, and specifically, the land where present-day Philadelphia sits was focused around the village of Shackamaxon.
That is such a crucial starting point because colonial histories often just sweep this initial coexistence and later displacement under the rug.
They do. And the mechanism of disruption for the Lenape was a classic colonial trifecta: expansion, conflict, and disease.
Okay.
As the 13 colonies rapidly expanded throughout the 18th century, the Lenape were systematically pushed out of the region. This was exacerbated by conflicts, but most devastatingly by the introduction of European diseases.
Yeah.
Smallpox in particular severely weakened their communities,
making resistance almost impossible.
Impossible. And the tragic conclusion of that period following the American Revolution was their forced relocation further west. This culminated in the U.S. federal government sending the majority of the remaining Lenape people to the Indian Territory, which is modern-day Oklahoma, during the Indian removal policy that accelerated in the 1860s.
Moving to the European timeline, it wasn't the English who were first to set up shop in the Delaware Valley, was it?
No, not at all. The first European settlements were the Dutch, who established Fort Nassau as early as 1623. A bit later, starting in 1638, came the Swedish settlers, who founded the small colony of New Sweden.
So the English were third to the party.
Right. They finally consolidated control over the region in 1664. But the real founding moment for the city we know as Philadelphia didn't occur until 1682 with William Penn.
And this is where we find that central, almost radical element of the city's identity, the spiritual driver. Penn, an English Quaker, was deeply driven by the persecution his community faced.
That's the key. I mean, that's the aha moment. His primary driver wasn't colonial wealth or expansion, but a genuine, unprecedented search for religious freedom.
A holy experiment, he called it.
Exactly. A place where religious toleration was the law, allowing anyone, regardless of faith, to worship freely. This was extraordinary for the time. And this vision of peace extended directly to his initial approach to indigenous relations.
Right, he didn't just seize the land.
No. Unlike many colonial leaders, Penn consciously purchased the land from the local Lenape tribes. This led to the famous Treaty of Shackamaxon. He made a treaty of friendship with Chief Kamini.
And while that peace didn't last forever under the pressure of immigration,
it was a huge anomaly in the 17th century. It helped Philadelphia maintain relative peace for decades and fueled its rapid initial growth because it was seen as a sanctuary.
But Penn had a vision not just for the soul of the city, but for its body. He wanted a green country town.
Yes. Designed specifically to avoid the crowding and the fire disasters that were plaguing London and other European capitals. This is what we call the planner's paradox.
The paradox.
He commissioned Thomas Holme to lay out the city on this magnificent grid plan with lots of open spaces to act as fire breaks. He even named the major east-west streets after local trees: Chestnut, Walnut, Mulberry.
A wonderful idea, completely ruined by commerce.
Precisely. The moment the inhabitants arrived, they disregarded the vision. They crowded along the Delaware River port, subdividing their lots immediately to maximize commercial access.
So much for the green country town.
The rural atmosphere Penn envisioned was sacrificed almost instantly for port commerce and density. Still, the framework was set, and the city charter was officially issued in 1701.
And what followed that foundation was just an explosion of civic life, largely facilitated by polymaths like Benjamin Franklin.
It was genuinely America's laboratory for civic maturity. Franklin, the ultimate civic entrepreneur, recognized the necessity of public goods.
Which is why that list of American firsts in Philly is so long.
It's remarkable and deep. Philadelphia had the nation's first circulating library in 1731, the first hospital, Pennsylvania Hospital, in 1751, and the first medical school in 1765. This wasn't accidental.
And its financial and economic primacy mirrored that institutional leadership, right?
Absolutely. In finance, it established the first central bank, the Bank of North America, in 1781, and the first stock exchange in 1790. This institutional strength continued, giving rise to the nation's first zoo in 1874 and the Wharton School, the first business school, in 1881.
It's that intellectual maturity that made it the inevitable focal point for the revolution.
There was simply no other logical location. By the 1750s, it had surpassed Boston and was the second largest city in the entire British Empire, trailing only London.
Which is why the famous documents happened there. The First Continental Congress convened in 1774.
And then came the Second Continental Congress from 1775 to 1781, where the Declaration of Independence was adopted on July 4th, 1776.
Inside the Pennsylvania State House, which we now know as Independence Hall.
That moment and that document represents the highest point of Philadelphia's intellectual and political influence. But, you know, that revolutionary identity came with real peril.
Right. The British response was swift. After George Washington's defeat at Brandywine, the British Army occupied Philadelphia.
For 9 long months, from September 1777 to June 1778.
And this is where you get these incredible human-scale anecdotes, like what they did with the Liberty Bell.
It's an amazing story. There was a real concern that the bells, which are made of bronze, would be melted down for British munitions. So the Pennsylvania State Bell, later renamed the Liberty Bell, was hastily taken down.
They didn't just move it, they hid it.
They did. It was transported by a heavily guarded wagon train out of the city and hidden under the floorboards of the Zion German Reformed Church in Allentown for the duration of the occupation.
Wow. Hiding the most potent symbol of liberty under a church floor, that says it all.
It really puts the stakes of the revolution into perspective.
And following the war, Philadelphia retained its critical role hosting the Constitutional Convention in 1787.
Where the U.S. Constitution, the longest standing codified national constitution, was debated and ratified. And even after that, it served as the nation's capital for a crucial decade, from 1790 to 1800, while D.C. was being built.
It was the seat of power, finance, and culture.
Until it was ultimately surpassed in population by New York City in 1790. And that transition really marks the shift from the colonial age to the industrial century.
Moving into the 19th century, Philadelphia stopped being the governmental capital, but it became a colossal industrial capital instead.
Absolutely. The city perfectly leveraged its geography, its access to rivers like the Schuylkill in Delaware, and the new railroad infrastructure to become a powerhouse.
What were the big industries?
Textiles were its largest single industry, but its global fame came from heavy manufacturing. Think Baldwin Locomotive Works, one of the world's largest producers of steam locomotives.
And shipbuilding.
William Cramp & Sons Shipbuilding Company, and of course the economic force of the entire region, the mighty Pennsylvania Railroad.
And that industrial might brought about massive social transformation, primarily through explosive immigration.
Huge influxes of people, predominantly from Ireland and Germany, coming to work in these new industrial districts.
And that density of labor led directly to a major shift in American working life.
It did. You see, the first general strike in North America right there in Philadelphia in 1835.
Oh.
It was a successful strike, ultimately securing the 10-hour workday for laborers, which was a huge step forward for the labor movement.
But those rapid demographic shifts were not absorbed peacefully.
Tragically not. The influx of Irish immigrants, especially those fleeing the Great Famine in the 1840s, led to severe nativist, anti-Irish, and anti-Catholic social friction. This erupted into violent riots in 1844.
A turbulent, brutal time of uncontrolled expansion.
It was. And the government struggled to manage this boom until a sweeping administrative decision in 1854 fundamentally redefined the city.
This is the Act of Consolidation.
Yes, a key detail. Before 1854, the city of Philadelphia was just the small central area center city, maybe 2 square miles. The Act of Consolidation dramatically expanded the city limits to roughly 134 square miles, making the city boundaries coterminous with Philadelphia County.
So what was the immediate consequence of that?
It was critical for centralizing governance and infrastructure. It brought all those rapidly growing, often chaotic industrial districts like Germantown and Kensington under one central banner.
Allowing for centralized policing, fire protection, and planning.
Exactly. And this new, larger, consolidated Philadelphia was celebrated in 1876 by the Centennial Exposition, the first official World's Fair in the U.S.
A showcase of American industrial progress. But the city reached its industrial and population peak in the mid-20th century before beginning a steep, painful decline.
The city officially peaked in population in 1950 at just over 2 million residents. What followed was a perfect storm.
The collapse of manufacturing jobs.
Driven by globalization and automation, combined with the national trend of suburbanization, this led to a profound demographic hemorrhage. Between 1950 and 2000, Philadelphia lost about 25% of its residents.
A quarter of its population. That level of shrinkage must have caused fiscal chaos.
It certainly did. The loss of population and the evaporation of the industrial tax base led to profound fiscal stress. The city approached near bankruptcy by the late 1980s.
And alongside that turmoil, the city experienced a moment of extreme internal conflict that remains a traumatic and complex moment in its history. The 1985 MOV bombing incident.
This incident is a chilling landmark in American urban history. In May 1985, the Philadelphia Police Department sought to execute arrest warrants on members of the Black Liberation Group MOV.
And after a standoff.
After an armed standoff, the police utilized a Pennsylvania State Police helicopter to drop a satchel charge of bomb onto the residential neighborhood home occupied by MOVE M members in Cobbs Creek.
The human and physical cost was devastating.
Horrific. 11 people were killed, including 5 children. The resulting fire was allowed to burn out of control, destroying 61 homes and displacing 250 residents.
It stands as one of the few instances where a U.S. city government intentionally bombed its own civilians.
In a civilian neighborhood.
Mm.
It really underscores the institutional and social breakdown the city experienced during that period.
However, the 21st century has brought a remarkable reversal.
It has. The population decline finally stopped around 2000, and a growth trend began accelerating around 2007. The city added over 92,000 residents between 2006 and 2017 alone.
And what's particularly fascinating is the documented migration pattern from New York City.
Yes, there's a very well-documented migration pattern from New York down to Philadelphia. New Yorkers are opting for Philly, citing its close proximity, but crucially, a significantly lower cost of living.
So Philly is acting as a kind of pressure release valve for the Northeast Corridor.
In a way, yes. It's a compelling case study, how a city scarred by 50 years of decline can pivot using its anchor institutions and location to attract a new generation.
So we've established that Philly is growing again, but where, geographically, are these millions of people fitting? Let's shift to the physical environment.
Geographically, Philadelphia is significant because it's situated right on the Atlantic seaboard fall line. This is that critical geological boundary that separates the flat coastal plain from the hilly Piedmont region.
Which explains some of the local topography. What are the extremes?
Since it lies along the Delaware River, its lowest point is sea level. But the highest point is in the northwest section, in Chestnut Hill, which reaches 446 feet.
And its location makes it an absolute nexus point for the surrounding region.
It's a multi-state hub. It's bordered by six counties in three different states: Montgomery and Bucks in Pennsylvania, Burlington, Camden, and Gloucester in New Jersey, and Delaware County in Pennsylvania.
All forming the Delaware Valley metro area. Now, moving to the man-made environment, William Penn's green country town vision might have failed, but Thomas Holmes' grid plan has profoundly shaped Center City.
The grid plan is enduring. Long, straight streets, the east-west ones, named for trees, the north-south axis dominated by Broad Street. And crucially, Holmes laid out five original public parks.
Penn Square, Washington Square, Rittenhouse,
and Franklin Square and Logan Circle. They remain central organizing points for the city's downtown life.
And the history of Philadelphia can literally be read in its architecture.
It's a remarkable showcase. You have the elegant Georgian style of Independence Hall, then 19th century Federal and Greek Revival, but the 20th century brought the real architectural drama.
And the most iconic symbol of that 19th century age is City Hall itself.
City Hall is a monument to Second Empire ambition. Built between 1871 and 1901, it reaches 548 feet and remained the city's tallest structure for nearly a century.
But Philly also pioneered modern architecture.
It did. In 1932, the PSFS building was completed, which is widely recognized as the first modern international-style skyscraper in the United States.
AI agents are everywhere, automating tasks and making decisions at machine speed. But agents make mistakes. Just one rogue agent can do big damage before you even notice. Rubrik Agent Cloud is the only platform that helps you monitor agents, set guardrails, and rewind mistakes, so you can unleash agents, not risk. Accelerate your AI transformation at rubrik.com. That's rubrik.com.
States.
And that set the stage for the intense and highly superstitious skyscraper rivalry.
It absolutely defines the modern skyline. City Hall was the tallest until 1987, when One Liberty Place was completed, violating an unofficial agreement that no building should rise higher than William Penn's hat.
The famous curse of Billy Penn, which we'll definitely get to later.
And that height race continued. Today, the city's peak is the Comcast Technology Center, completed in 2018. At 11,121 feet, it's the tallest building in the U.S. outside of Manhattan and Chicago.
But while the skyscrapers capture the eye, the soul of Philadelphian architecture lives closer to the ground.
In the Row House. The Row House is the definitive Philadelphian home. It gives the city its unique density and aesthetic, from the historic Federal-style blocks in Old City to the Victorian twins in West Philly.
And despite the early crowding, Penn's green country town vision wasn't entirely lost, was it?
It wasn't. The city boasts a vast total of 11,211 acres of park space. The anchor is the immense Fairmount Park, which, when combined with Wissahickon Valley Park, forms one of the nation's largest contiguous urban park areas.
Let's touch on the climate, as that dictates so much of outdoor life.
Philadelphia sits on a climatic boundary. It's classified as humid subtropical, but sometimes as temperate maritime.
In simple terms.
It means the city typically avoids harsh, consistently freezing winters, but gets hot and wet summers. The July daily average is around 79 degrees Fahrenheit. Winters are moderately cold, with the January average just above freezing.
And snowfall.
It averages around 22 inches, but it's highly variable. I mean, remember the record storm that dropped over 30 inches in January 1996? But you get a long 217-day growing season.
Sounds like a climate that supports robust civic life and helps attract people.
It's pretty classic mid-Atlantic climate.
So as Philadelphia reversed its population decline, its demographic landscape fundamentally changed, driven heavily by foreign immigration.
This is perhaps the most significant modern transformation. The foreign-born population doubled between 1990 and 2017. More dramatically, it increased by 69% between 2000 and 2016 alone.
That's a huge shift. Who are the primary drivers of this influx?
Looking at 2017 data, the top country of origin is China, by a significant margin. Following China, you have the Dominican Republic, Jamaica, India, and Vietnam.
And that growth creates this fascinating ethnic geography with distinct cultural clusters.
That's right. Starting with long-established European heritage, Philly still has the second largest Irish and Italian populations in the U.S. after New York. South Philadelphia is a major hub for Italian-American life, with the famous Italian Market.
And what about the African-American and Latino populations?
The African-American population in Philadelphia is the fourth largest in the U.S. Traditionally centered in West and North Philly, you're now seeing moves to the Northeast and Southwest. For the Latino community, Philly has the second largest Puerto Rican population on the mainland. The Fairhill and Eastern North Philadelphia areas have one of the highest concentrations of Puerto Ricans outside of Puerto Rico itself.
And how has the increasing Asian population manifested geographically?
Chinatown and Center City is a historic hub, but South Philadelphia is arguably a more diverse locus of Asian culture today, with Little Saigon and Cambodia Town. Meanwhile, the large Korean community has shifted north towards Cheltenham.
And Indians are a major group as well.
They are the second largest Asian group in the city, and the largest foreign-born population in the entire Delaware Valley metro area.
This concentration of diverse, often economically challenged communities leads us to a crucial element, wealth disparity.
It's a very serious issue. The median household income in 2020 was around $53,000, and nearly 23% of the population lived in poverty, making it one of the poorest big cities in the nation.
And you see that reflected in the scale of the food poverty programs.
The scale is immense. Philabundance claims to feed 90,000 people a week. The Share Food program claims to feed 1 million people a month. These figures show the stark reality of supporting a polarized population.
On a different note, we should also mention the city's celebrated gayborhood near Washington Square.
Yes, a vibrant hub of LGBTQ plus friendly businesses and cultural life.
Now, let's finally get to the most discussed and certainly most delicious element of Philadelphia's culture, the cuisine. We have to start with the cheesesteak.
We must pay homage. The cheesesteak is the definitive staple. And the cultural rivalry is legendary. Pat's King of Steaks versus Gino's Steaks glaring at each other across an intersection in the Italian Market.
The battle of Whiz-Wit versus Provolone Without.
Exactly. But the truly Philadelphian palate is so much more.
You have the hoagie, the roast pork sandwich.
Many locals will argue is superior to the cheesesteak.
Stromboli, scrapple, the iconic soft pretzel, water ice.
Yeah, the classic local prepackaged treats like Irish potato candy and tasty cakes.
And the heart of this gastronomic tradition is the Reading Terminal Market.
Founded in 1893, it's one of the oldest and largest enclosed food markets in the country. It's famous for Pennsylvania Dutch specialties, reflecting the region's deep German heritage.
Beyond food, Philadelphia also has a unique and globally influential linguistic footprint.
This is fascinating. Linguists consider the traditional Philadelphia accent to be the most distinctive accent in North America. It's part of the Mid-Atlantic American English family.
And it's a major subject of research.
Absolutely. The Philly dialect has been one of the best-studied forms of American English, largely thanks to the work of the sociolinguist William Lebov at the University of Pennsylvania.
And finally, culturally, the city has played an influential yet sometimes underappreciated role in American popular music.
Hugely influential. In 1952, the local teen dance program Bandstand premiered. It became American Bandstand in 1957, hosted by Dick Clark.
And produced in Philly until 1964.
It was crucial. It launched the careers of many teen idols and established a national clean-cut image for rock and roll.
And later, the city helped usher in the disco era.
That's the other major wave. Philly soul in the late 60s and 70s defined the sound of the era. Led by producers like Gamble and Huff, it was known for its lush string arrangements and driving rhythms, a direct precursor to both disco and modern R&B.
Here's where it gets really interesting. When we talk about cultural legacy, you might not immediately think of Philly as the art capital, but it has built an undeniable supremacy in public art.
That's right. Philadelphia officially boasts more public art and murals than any other American city. And this was not accidental. It was the result of deliberate policy going back nearly 150 years.
Walk us through the key programs.
It began way back in 1872 with the Association for Public Art, the first private group in the U.S. dedicated to this. But the real game changer was the 1959 Percent for Art Ordinance.
And the significance is that Philly didn't just have a program. It wrote the blueprint for how American cities fund public art.
Exactly. It was the first of its kind. It legally required that a percentage, typically 1% of the cost of municipal construction projects, be dedicated to funding public art. This model has since been copied by cities nationwide.
Then came the mural revolution.
The Mural Arch Program, created in 1984, originally to provide an outlet for graffiti artists. That program has funded over 2,800 murals. These are often massive works that completely transform the streetscape.
And beyond the public murals, the city has staggering world-class institutions.
Absolutely. The Philadelphia Art Museum is one of the largest in the world, famous for its collection and, of course, the Rocky Steps. Nearby is the Rodin Museum, with the largest collection of his work outside of France.
And this concentration of art and institutional knowledge leads us directly to the city's other great engine, its massive academic sector.
Philadelphia is a true knowledge hub. It has the third largest student concentration on the East Coast, with over 120,000 college and university students in the city.
Let's look at the heavyweights.
You start with the University of Pennsylvania Penn and Ivy League institution. Then you have Temple University, the city's largest by enrollment, followed by Drexel University and Thomas Jefferson University.
The concentration of medical and research institutions is particularly noteworthy.
It is the city's defining research strength. Philadelphia is home to 5 medical schools, which attracts massive federal investment. In 2015 alone, they received over $252 million in NIH grants.
And that academic density creates a robust foundation for the modern economy.
It's commercialized at a massive scale. Metropolitan Philadelphia ranks as one of the big 5 U.S. venture capital hubs. Its geography helps, with proximity to New York finance and D.C. regulatory environments.
And the physical evidence is seen in the major corporate headquarters.
Definitely. Philadelphia is the headquarters for Comcast, the nation's largest multinational telecom. Also Aramark, Cigna, and Urban Outfitters. And the NASDAQ-owned Philadelphia Stock Exchange remains a global leader in options trading.
So when we talk about the challenges of a transforming city, public safety is central. Philadelphia has seen dramatically variable trends.
They've been very dramatic. Homicide rates peaked initially in 1990, with over 500 murders recorded. Rates then declined sharply in the early 2010s, reaching a modern low of 246 murders in 2013.
But mirroring national trends, the rates rose dramatically again.
They did, culminating in an all-time record high of 562 murders in 2021. This was a critical crisis point. Fortunately, subsequent reports show a significant recent reversal, with the count dropping to 410 in 2023.
Related to public safety, Philadelphia made a major policy decision in 2014 regarding drug enforcement.
A very important shift. In 2014, Philly became the largest U.S. city to decriminalize possession of small amounts of marijuana. It changed enforcement from a criminal offense to a civil infraction punishable by a low fine.
And what was the measurable outcome?
The impact was immediate and substantial. From 2013 to 2018, the number of marijuana arrests in the city dropped by more than 85%. It represents a profound reduction in arrests and subsequent criminal justice entanglement.
Turning now to governance, Philadelphia has a unique political structure.
That's right, consolidated city-county status. Legally, Philadelphia County is a nullity. All county functions are assumed by the city. It's a strong mayor form of government.
And its political history is interesting because today it is famously blue.
It is. But surprisingly, Philly was a bastion of the Republican Party from the Civil War until the mid-1930s. It hosted the first Republican National Convention in 1856.
But that flipped during the Great Depression.
Dramatically. Since 1936, Philadelphia has voted Democratic in every single presidential election. And that partisan dominance is overwhelming today. Voter registration is about 75% Democratic.
Finally, let's wrap this segment by highlighting Philadelphia's critical status as a logistics and transportation hub.
It is geographically essential to the Northeast Corridor. 30th Street Station is Amtrak's third busiest hub in the nation, trailing only New York and D.C. It integrates Amtrak, SEPTA, and NJ Transit.
And the local transit network is massive.
SEPTA operates the 2 main subway lines, the Market Frankfurt and Broad Street lines, plus buses and trolleys. And Philadelphia International Airport is the 21st busiest in the nation.
But the real logistical story of recent years seems to be at sea.
It is. Philiport, the city's seaport, is rapidly becoming a major global player. It has made enormous investments to double its capacity and, crucially, to accommodate supersized post-Panamax shipping vessels.
And for listeners, post-Panamax just means these are ships that are too large for the original Panama Canal locks.
Exactly. The fact that Philiport can handle these massive modern vessels shows that Philadelphia is actively positioning itself as a vital logistical gateway, competing directly with the huge ports in New York and Baltimore.
Our deep dive wouldn't be complete without looking at the raw, visceral passion of its citizens, especially when it comes to sports.
Philadelphia is defined by its intense, sometimes excessive, fan culture. It's one of only 12 U.S. cities with teams in all 4 major league sports.
And the history runs incredibly deep. Give us that amazing stat about the Phillies.
The Philadelphia Phillies, founded in 1883, hold the distinction of being the oldest team in American pro sports to continuously play under the same name in the same city.
That's incredible longevity. Now, we must talk about the notorious curse of Billy Penn.
It's a fascinating cultural anecdote. Following the 76ers NBA title in 1983, the city entered a 25-year championship drought. This was widely attributed to the curse of Billy Penn.
And the theory was?
That the curse was activated in 1987 when One Liberty Place became the first building to surpass the height of the statue of William Penn atop City Hall, violating that informal agreement.
I love that. So how is the curse finally broken?
The narrative holds that it was broken when the Phillies won the 2008 World Series. Interestingly, construction workers discreetly mounted a small statue of William Penn on the topmost point of the newest skyscraper, the Comcast Center.
A kind of architectural apology.
Or a counter curse. Since then, the Eagles have won a Super Bowl, so maybe it worked.
Outside of the big four leagues, the city has a rich history in rowing.
A profound history. The heart of it is the historic Boathouse Row on the Schuylkill River. The city hosts two of the largest scholastic rowing events in North America, the Dad Vale Regatta and the Stotesbury Cup Regatta.
Finally, let's zoom out and consider Philadelphia's identity on the world stage through its international connections.
Philadelphia has 8 official sister cities, including Florence, Tel Aviv, Tianjin in China, and Frankfurt.
And these relationships aren't just ceremonial. They're integrated into the city's landmarks.
They are. Sister Cities Park on Benjamin Franklin Parkway is one example. More visibly, the magnificent Chinatown Gate, erected in 1984, was crafted by artisans who came over directly from Tianjin. It's a powerful symbol of that relationship.
So we began this deep dive promising to show you a Philadelphia that goes far beyond the static historical images you know. We've traced its journey from William Penn's spiritual holy experiment and his green country town vision.
To the cradle of American liberty, hosting the Continental Congresses and ratifying the Constitution.
We saw the immense 19th century industrial peak, followed by the catastrophic population and fiscal decline of the mid-20th century, a period marked by the tragic 1985 Mauvie bombing.
But the story pivoted sharply in the 21st century. That decline has been strongly reversed, fueled by international immigration and notably by the inflow of residents fleeing the high costs of New York City.
We learned how that dense, diverse population is housed in the signature row houses and anchored by an unparalleled system of public art programs, all supported by one of the East Coast's largest academic clusters.
The modern picture of Philadelphia is one of profound dynamism and contradictions.
Yeah.
Deep poverty alongside immense corporate and academic wealth, and a turbulent history of public safety slowly stabilizing. It is a critical logistics nexus, firmly establishing its global trade status.
So what does this all mean for you, the learner?
If we connect this to the bigger picture, consider this. Given Philadelphia's deep historical roots in American governance, coupled with its current status as a Big Five venture capital hub and its role as a magnet for urban professionals, what role might Philadelphia play in shaping the future competitive dynamics between the Northeast Corridor megacities?
And how will Penn's original green country town vision hold up against the dual pressures of gentrification and being the fastest growing magnet for urban professionals in the 21st century? That tension between history and future ambition is the question you should be mulling the next time you hear someone mention Philly.
DC politicians want to enact harmful credit card mandates that could take away your cash back and rewards points. Perks that stretch your budget and make life a little easier. Losing these benefits means less money for your family's everyday essentials, like gas and groceries. The perks you rely on could disappear, leaving you with higher costs and fewer options. Tell Congress to guard your card and oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card mandates.
Paid for by Electronic Payments Coalition.